We'll just be reviewing Prahlad Maharaj's life, so that tomorrow morning, when we begin the prayers, that'll be fresh in our mind. Of course, I'm sure everybody here knows the story of Prahlad Maharaj. But hearing again and hearing again and hearing again is the method of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is sometimes compared to the coolness and the fragrance of sandalwood. Of course, now it's cold out, so the coolness of sandalwood is not so attractive, but when you take sandalwood and you're making sandalwood paste from sandalwood, just by the process of rubbing in a circular motion, the sandalwood over the stone, the wood that's otherwise hard becomes soft. I won't need those today, tomorrow. You want some light? Okay, make some light. The hard sandalwood becomes softer, eventually a paste, and there's a fragrance that comes out of the sandalwood in the form of the sandalwood paste. So similarly, the sweetness of Srimad Bhagavatam, the juice of Srimad Bhagavatam, comes from hearing it again and hearing it again and over and over again. There's a nice section of Chaitanya Charitamrita that this painting illustrates. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was living in Puri, he lived at Gambira, at the home of Kashi Mishra. And then early in the morning, every morning, he would go see Lord Jagannath. And after seeing Lord Jagannath, the pujaris would give him some prasad. And he would take that prasad and go visit Haridas Thakur and give the prasad of Lord Jagannath to Haridas Thakur and spend time engaging in Krishna Katha with Haridas. And after spending time with Haridas, he would go to the Tota Gopinath temple. And at the Tota Gopinath temple, he would see the deity, Tota Gopinath, dance and chant ecstatically before the Tota Gopinath deity, and then sit with Gadadhar Pandit, who was the Tota Gopinath Pujari, and hear Srimad Bhagavatam from him. Chaitanya Charitamrita says he would hear the entire narration of Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, and when Gadadhar Pandit had finished speaking, he would say, "Say it again, say it again." And so Gadadhar Pandit would say it again and again and again. So this narration is not something that's new, but it's like the sandalwood, the fragrance comes out by rubbing, and the sweetness of the Bhagavatam comes out by hearing and chanting it in discussion, in association of others. This is a painting of a painting. It's a reproduction of a painting that was commissioned by Maharaj Prataparudra, who was prostrated before the Vaishnavas, and I'll give you the who's who in the picture. This is Gadadhar Pandit reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, this is Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. This is other, you'll see another painting tomorrow. Shows he has a lot more hair. It's Advaita Acharya, Sarva Bhuma Bhattacharya, Surup Damodar, there's Haridas Thakur, Jagatananda Pandit, Raghunath Das Goswami, and Srivas of the Panchatattva. So the devotees would come together, as you see here, and regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam recited by Gadadhar Pandit. And hear it again, say it again, no, but we'll explore together, and hearing it again, that there's very deep and profound messages. What we're mainly going to be covering is chapter 9, starting tomorrow morning. But the whole discussion starts from chapter 5. It spans over several chapters. And we're now going to... There's the deity of Prahlad Maharaj in Mayapur during Chandan Yatra, when the bodies of the deities are covered in sandalwood. And at the beginning, kind of the introduction of chapter 6 of Canto 7, Prabhupada writes, can we fix that? Tapping the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, who is in the Parampara succession, one will be able to understand the mode of spiritual life. By accepting this mode of activity, there is no need for material qualifications. So I selected this particular statement because it expresses essences. One of those essences is the life of Prahlad Maharaj is meant to demonstrate material qualification in spiritual life is not a prerequisite for spiritual life. And Prahlad says it again and again and again and again and again and again. It's not based upon material qualification, but it's the mode of activity, as Prabhupada is writing here, or the mode of spiritual life, the mode of submission, the mood of humility, the mood of compassion, and so forth. So we'll learn as we go through all of this about the mode of spiritual life. So the story, this is now taking directly from Prabhupada's writings, the language, Once Upon a Time. When the four sons of Lord Brahma, pictured here, named Sanaka, Sanandana, Sanatana, and Sanatkumar, were wandering throughout the world, they came by chance to Vishnu Loka. So, we know that Lord Brahma is the first born living being, and after creating the universe, he wanted to fill up the universe, and so he has the power from his own body. He exercised the power to generate offspring. The firstborn were the four Kumaras. They were requested by Lord Brahma to assist him in creating praja, population to fill the universe, and they declined. They wished to instead to remain brahmachari. And so they did. And they're the oldest, next oldest to Lord Brahma, but their form was always that of a small child, 5 or 6 years of age child, clothed by the four directions, wandering naked. And the way the Bhagavatam describes this is just like a little child. They're free to go anywhere, they're not restricted. And they had the power, so they were going anywhere, everywhere, without restriction. And the purpose of going from one place to another place is sometimes because you want something, but you watch the behavior. Prabhupada speaks like this. You watch the behavior of little children, and it's hard to understand the reason from going from one place to another place, but they go here and they go there, and no one restricts them. And similarly, just by chance, they came one time to all the way to the abode of Vaikuntha. They had such power. And although these four Kumaras were older than any of other of Brahma's praja within this universe, they still remained very small. When they got to the gates of Vaikuntha, the gatekeepers, Giant Vijay, thought, these are little children, they can't come in, they'll make a mess. So they stopped them. And when they stopped them, the four sages were fully enlightened, and they became agitated. And they spoke, "You're unqualified to be gatekeepers of Vaikuntha." Specifically, Prabhupada is saying here, agitated by the material qualities of passion and ignorance, you're not fit to live at the shelter of Madhudvisa's lotus feet, which are free from such modes. It would be better for you to go immediately to the material world and take your birth in a family of most sinful asuras. Now, that's a fast forward because they had some choices. But I want to spend a little bit of time on this word Madhudvisa. As you see, it's highlighted. Because they're although they're little boys, looking like little boys, they're highly learned, and they're at the gates of Vaikuntha, and they know there is this history of Lord Vishnu killing the Madhu demon. So one of the names that we know Krishna by is Madhusudana. Sudana is he kills, like Keshi Sudana, Madhu Sudana. Sudana, he's the killer of the Keshi demon, the killer of the Madhu demon. But another name of Krishna is this one, or another name of Vishnu is Madhudvisa. And dvisa or dvisha comes from the word envy, or to have envy, like dvesha, raga dvesha, same root word. Having ill feeling towards, or having specifically envy. So Prabhupada named one of his disciples Madhudvisa. He's no longer with us, but wonderful devotee that was GBC in Australia for a long, long time, very trusted leader in Prabhupada's group of leaders. And one time, in a sitting in the room together with Prabhupada, he asked Prabhupada, "What's the meaning of my name?" And Prabhupada said, "Madhu means the demon Madhu, and Dvisha means having envy." And Prabhupada said, Lord Vishnu had envy towards the demon Madhu, so he killed him. And Madhudvisa said, "But Prabhupada, how could Vishnu have envy towards anyone?" And Prabhupada's reply was, "No, no. Not the material kind of envy, but in the pure state, because everything," these aren't his words, "but everything is within Krishna." Say it in reverse. Is there something that exists that's not within Krishna. Now there's the contaminated version of things, and then there's the pure version of things. But the contaminated version or the reflection version is there because of the pure version. So Prabhupada said, anything is possible for Krishna. Any emotion in its perfect form. So we'll see this again tomorrow morning, this word dvisha, when Lord Nrisimhadev is angry, even after having killed Hiranyakashipu, he's still angry, and that anger has arisen from he has disdain, transcendental, for those who are trying to harm his devotee. So here, the four Kumaras, nice painting, they're one of them is pointing to Jai or Vijay saying, you're not fit to be in the kingdom of Madhu Dvisha, who's free from all modes. So there it is. He's free from all modes, but he has envy towards Madhu. So it's not a contaminated kind. Interesting, huh? The four Kumaras are Shaktyamesh avatars. It means they're living entities that bear the fullness of the Lord's potency in a particular regard, and theirs is Jnana Shakti. They're as full as the Lord is full in knowledge potency. So they know all these things. So they're purposefully saying to Jai and Vijay, this is the kingdom of Madhu Dvisha, who is free from the modes of nature, but you two obviously have the modes of nature infested in your character, so you don't belong here. Here's another illustration showing they're coming to the gates of Vaikuntha, and the gatekeepers stop them from entering with their clubs. So Jai and Vijay, they're very apologetic because of their offenses at the feet of devotees. Two attendants of the Lord, Jai and Vijay, became Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha in Satyayuga, Ravana and Kumbhakarna in the next yuga, Treta Yuga and Shishupal and Dantavakra at the end of Dwapara Yuga. They were cursed to take birth as demons for three lifetimes. So when this was going on, Lord Vishnu came, or Narayana came to the gate, and the four Kumaras, they're not just Gyanis now, they're Shuddha Bhaktas, and they're very interested in the Lord's lotus feet. Here's a painting showing them moving about the realm of Vaikuntha, looking quite different than the other residents of Vaikuntha. Here's a painting showing Lord Vishnu with the goddess of fortune, and the Kumaras are down here, Jai and Vijay are over here, they're all paying their respects to Lord Narayana. So they were cursed to come into the material world, and they immediately fell into the material world. And when they took birth, the Bhagavatam says, the whole earth trembled when demons are born. There's inauspiciousness on earth. I'll just share this. One time we were in coming back from Harinam Sankirtan in our Sankirtan van, crossing over the Manhattan Bridge into Brooklyn. And it was, we're coming back for lunch, so it was the middle part of the day, full, you know, bright, sunny summer day. And all of a sudden, the sky became black, almost like night. There was still some light from the sun coming, but just suddenly, for about 8, 9 or so minutes, very, very dark. And then all of a sudden, it cleared. And I just took it, some demon just took birth somewhere in Brooklyn, and these signs of inauspiciousness, just like the Bhagavatam says. So of the two brothers, here's a lovely picture of Hiranyaksha. He was assisting his brother because they both have the Hiranya part of their name, which means they were very fond of gold. And so he was excavating so much gold from the earth that the planet Earth fell out of its orbit and plunged into the Garbhodak Ocean at the bottom of the universe. So Lord Brahma, contemplating what to do about this Hiranyaksha and the problem of the earth, because he's the creator of the universe, and everyone looks to him for taking care of these cosmic problems. So he was contemplating what to do, and as he was contemplating, from his nostril, a very small creature the size of a thumb, looking like a boar, came from his nostril and then went into the air and expanded and became bigger and bigger and bigger. So big, it looked to be like the size of an elephant. Giant elephant in the sky. Lord Varaha. And then this Lord Varaha knew exactly what to do. He plunged into the Garbhodak Ocean with his tusks. He started lifting the earth, and when lifting the earth from the depths of the water, Hiranyaksha came and challenged him. And a big battle ensued. Guess who won? Lord Varaha finally finished Hiranyaksha and returned the earth back to its position in orbit. Of course, the demigods were very pleased, but the brother of Hiranyaksha was very angry. And, whoops, what happened? He took a vow, very angry vow, that he would avenge the death of his brother by killing the person who killed his brother, Lord Vishnu. He became the avowed enemy of Lord Vishnu. So in the course of time, as he became more and more powerful, he wanted not only power to rule the universe, but now he wanted to rule the universe permanently. He wanted to be Indra forever. So he went to the forest, and he underwent a very severe type of austerity. Of course, doing for a little while is not so difficult. You stand on your toes and hold your hands over your head. You can do it for a little while. But, you know, besides getting tiring. Anyway, he was doing this with such intensity that flames were coming out of his head and the whole universe was becoming choked up and very, very distressed. But he stood there and a whole anthill formed around his body. So the way that Prabhupada describes this, here's another image of Hiranyakashipu doing his austerity. Lord Brahma, meanwhile, while Hiranyakashipu had left his kingdom to do this austerity, the demons didn't have that same leader, so they scattered here and there. The demigods took the opportunity to invade and take over the kingdom that Hiranyakashipu had left empty. And Hiranyakashipu's wife, Kayadu, so the demigods were going to arrest her and wait till the child was born and kill the child. But fortunately, Narada knew exactly what to do at exactly the right time and say exactly the right thing. And he explained to them, no, this isn't a demon, this is a great devotee. So you please entrust this great devotee to me. I'll take care of him and her. So Narada Muni brought Kayadu to his ashram. There's a place where some ladies would stay, and she asked for a benediction that the child would not be born until Hiranyakashipu returned from his austerities. And Narada gave his benediction for that to happen, spiritual teachings. And not only he gave it to her, but to the child within her womb. Prahlad, still within the womb of Kayadu, Prabhupada writes that he was listening very carefully. Now, I don't know what children are listening very carefully. Certainly there's spiritual benefit from hearing, even if the child isn't very, 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 very special like Prahlad. We'll hear at the very end, who was Prahlad in his previous life? The Bhagavatam has one version, and we'll hear. So, while this was going on, Narada instructing Kayadu and Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu's austerities had become mature. Lord Brahma came and said, what is it you want? You're disturbing the whole universe. You're doing this very severe austerity. I want immortality. So what he did is he sprinkled some water from his kamandalu, and the anthill washed away, and the body of Hiranyakashipu that had been reduced to bones became full again. And Hiranyakashipu was so severe and so skilled that although his body was gone, his life air was circulating through the hollow of his bones. He was an intense personality. So, when Brahma said, well, I can't give you immortality because I'm not immortal myself. And so he played an intelligent manipulation. I can't give me immortality, then arrange that I cannot be killed during the day or at night, or inside or outside, or on the ground or in the sky, and can't be killed by any created being, nor any weapon, nor any animal, nor human being. Ravana left out the human being part. But Hiranyakashipu didn't. So, the boon was granted, and Hiranyakashipu went back to his palace. Kayadu then gave birth, and Prahlad grew up as an ardent devotee of Vishnu. But that's not what his father wanted. His father wanted to be an anti-Vishnu, or a demon like himself. So he was entrusted in the school of his spiritual master, and the spiritual master of the The spiritual master of the demons is who? Shukracharya. And Shukracharya had two sons, and those two sons, Shanda and Amarka. And so they went to Asurakula. And they tried to train Prahlad how to become an Asura. But he wasn't interested in becoming an Asura. He was just interested in... So one day, his father, Hiranyakashipu, brought Prahlad to see him and had him seated on his lap very affectionately and asked him, "What's the best thing that you've learned?" And Prahlad said, "The best thing I've learned is that people like you who are absorbed in material consciousness of duality, thinking I and mine, forest and worship Vishnu." His father didn't want to hear that at all. And he challenged the teachers. "Someone has polluted this boy." And they said, no, we've been very vigilant. No one's been around. He said, "You better watch it. You go back and make sure he learns how to become an Asura." So they made their best effort, but Prahlad wasn't a fit recipient for all of those teachings. Then one day, this is just simply narration of the story of Prahlad. One day when the teachers were out of the classroom, they wanted to play, but he wanted to talk about Krishna. So we had them, there's a whole chapter on his instructions to his classmates. And at the end of that instruction, they had kirtan. And the boys really liked kirtan. They hadn't been taught kirtan by Shanda and Amarka. And in the midst of the kirtan, in come the school teachers and, "What's going on? Where'd you learn this?" So they reported this to Hiranyakashipu. And again, Hiranyakashipu brought his son forward and inquired, "What's the best thing you learned from your teachers?" And they didn't learn from the teachers. He learned it from Narada and described the 9 processes of devotional service. Famous section of the Bhagavatam. It's an important section. So, running devotional service to Vishnu, he's the enemy. So the teachers are chastised, and he ordered that Prahlad should be killed. Not a nice father. So, in different ways, attempts were made to kill Prahlad, putting him in a den of snakes, and wild elephants stampede him. There's another with a pit of snakes, in a circle of fire, in a pot of boiling oil. Nothing worked. He tried, and he did his everything, all of his dirty things that he knew how to do, and nothing worked. There's the elephant again. Foot, he ended up on the head of the elephant. There's this pot of boiling oil. So, Hiranyakashipu was so angry. "I'm the most powerful person in the universe. Everyone's afraid of me. But you're not afraid of me. Where do you get your Lord Vishnu?" "Oh, where is this Vishnu? He's everywhere." Then Hiranyakashipu said, this is now Prabhupada, "Oh, most unfortunate Prahlad, you have always described the Supreme Being other than me. A Supreme Being who is above everything, who is the controller of everyone, is everywhere. Then why is he not present before me in this pillar?" Of course, we normally hear it a little differently, but that's one place Prabhupada describes like that. So we also normally hear he struck the pillar with his sword. Here it's he struck the pillar with his fist. And there's Lord Srinadev. And the way Prabhupada writes it, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. We'll hear something more about this never before seen, because it's in the beginning. Tomorrow morning, you know, she never saw this form before. The form was to uphold the words of Brahma, neither man nor beast, so it's half man, half beast. The Lord appeared in the assembly hall. Big battle between the two. Guess who won? Lord Nrisimhadev captured Hiranyakashipu, placed him on his lap, supported him with his thighs, not inside, not outside, not in the air, not in the land, but on his lap, and easily bifurcated the midsection of Hiranyakashipu. That was the end of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, the cursing of the first two of the cursing of Jai and Vijay. And after Hiranyakashipu was killed, the soldiers and generals and associates of Hiranyakashipu went to take revenge, and Lord Nrisimhadev manifested many more arms and roaring very loudly and chopping the bodies and throwing them through the air. And big scene. The demigods very pleased because Hiranyakashipu had become so powerful and was big terrorist. And after Hiranyakashipu was killed, the Lord was very angry, so there's still roaring and showing anger. So there's a whole chapter of the demigods offering prayers, beautiful prayers, glorification of the Supreme Lord. He wasn't becoming pacified. So finally, Lord Brahma requested Prahlad. He appeared for you, to protect you. So you can pacify him. Please, you go forward. And Prahlad wasn't afraid. He was, the Bhagavatam describes, he was confident that anger is not for us, it's for the demons. And so he came before Lord Nrisimhadev to offer some very beautiful prayers. Now, this is where he leads us into tomorrow morning, where the prayers begin. Lord Nrisimhadev placed his hand, or his paw, on the head of Prahlad. Immediately, this is Prabhupada's language, immediately he achieved Brahmagyan, spiritual knowledge, and in that state of spiritual knowledge, remember, he's just a little boy, he has full spiritual knowledge, and he offers prayers filled with spiritual knowledge and filled with devotional ecstasy. Now, Prahlad, because he's a devotee, he understood. He understood that the Lord wanted to give him benediction. But Prahlad didn't want to take any benediction, thinking benedictions is going to be a problem in my spiritual path. Finally, he requested the benediction that I not be asked to take any benedictions that will impede my bhakti. Down at the bottom. He said that if the Lord wanted to give him benediction, He wanted the Lord to assure him that he would never be induced to take any benedictions for the sake of material desires. This is not what we'll be discussing. It's chapter 10. We're going to be discussing chapter 9. But in chapter 10, he said, our relationship is, you're the master, and I'm the servant, and there's nothing else. The relationship is not, you give me, and I want from you. That's business. But any master that does like that, he's not a good master. And any servant that serves his master with some purpose to achieve from the master, he's not a good servant. That's not our relationship. It's just one thing. You're the master, I'm the servant, nothing else. So the Lord gave him the benediction that he would rule in the material world for the duration of one whole manu duration, and then he would come to the spiritual world. But in the course of that service to the Supreme Lord, he would become fully purified through the process of bhakti yoga. And then to teach others this process of bhakti yoga in his role as a king. So Prahlad's a devotee, and he just accepted whatever the Lord arranged for him. He asked for his father to be delivered, but Lord Nrsingadev said he's already delivered. In fact, not only he's already delivered, but when one becomes a devotee like you, 21 generations in both directions are liberated. Then he was asked by Lord Nrsingadev to perform the funeral for his father, and they embraced one another. Very beautiful painting. So now, tomorrow we'll begin chapter 9, where the prayers of Prahlad begin, the prayers to Lord Nrsingadev at the request of Lord Brahma. There's a nice photo of the deity of Lord Nrsingadev in Nuvrindavan, right? And the deity of Lord Nrsingadev in Sridhar Mayapur. Now, there are two versions of who was Prahlad Maharaj in his previous life, because he was recognized by Narada still within the womb of his mother that he's a great devotee. So who was he before he was in the womb of his mother? And why did he, if he's such a great personality, why did he take birth as the son of Hiranyakashipu, who was not a nice person? So the Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj says, this is chapter 10, "Oh, my worshipable Lord, because the seed of lust and desire, which is the root cause of material existence, is within the core of everyone's heart. You have sent me to this material world to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee." Indirectly meaning he's a Vaikunthavasi who was sent by the Supreme Lord to teach pure devotional service. So it's similar to what Prabhupada said in that introduction to chapter 6. To teach us the way, the mode of pure devotional service. That was the Supreme Lord's intention. And he fulfilled that intention. Now, in Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is another reference that we accept as source material, here is a different description. Now, that just means, different appearance of Hiranyakashipu and learned to Shringadev and Prahlad, just a different yuga cycle arrangement like that. So here's what it says in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Prahlad is asking the Supreme Lord, Nrisingadev, I bow down to you, O Lord Nrisingadev. I offer my obeisances. I'm your devotee, O Lord of Lords. I now have this inquiry from you. How did I develop such intense devotion for you? Kindly tell me. How did I become your exalted devotee? Of course, Narada knew he was a great devotee. Lord Nrisingadev said, O greatly learned one, O my son, listen carefully as I explain to you the reason for your devotion to me that has made you very dear to me. In ancient times, you were born as a Brahmin. Your name was Vasudeva and you became attached to a prostitute. In that birth, you became so attached to that prostitute that you didn't do any pious activities except one single vow in relation to me. So we'll hear about that. As a result of observing that vow, you developed exalted devotion for me, prostitute. You became accustomed to drinking wine and performing other sinful activities so that you never engaged in the study of the Vedas. You spent most of your time at the house of the prostitute. Sounds like a Jamila. One day, however, you had a quarrel with the prostitute. And because of that quarrel, you fasted. It doesn't say it here, but it was an Ekadasi day and he fasted. You observed a sacred vow. So the sacred vow was observing fasting at Ekadasi. It wasn't intentional. He just had a quarrel with his girlfriend. Because of that quarrel, you didn't stay together that night, and she also didn't eat anything. She observed Nirjala Ekadasi, same as you. And because of observing that vow throughout the whole day and night, you both became purified, and pious credit came to you for that. So, on the strength of observing this vow, the demigods are able to enjoy their lives in the heavenly planets. Brahma created this very auspicious day, like Ekadasi. So, Prahlad, by having observed that by accident, that auspicious vow, you now have come to the position of devotional service. In her next life, the prostitute became an apsara and then went back to Godhead. And you became the son of Hiran, and you're going to be my devotee for this life and then also go back to the spiritual world. In order to propagate devotional service to me, you have incarnated without me. After completing the task of preaching the glories of devotional service, you will again enter my eternal abode. Those are some nice paintings. This is Narada. And the benefit that Prahlad will hear in his prayers, the importance that he places in having had the good fortune of Narada's association and hankering for more and more and more of Narada's association because and serve Lord Nrisingadev better. So just circle back again and say, these two sections, Prahlad Maharaj's story, known, very famous, and they're famous and well-known because what's within them is very important. And in the case of Dhruva, we hear a story of someone going from very materially motivated purpose of reaching Vishnu to the position of purity in devotion, unmixed devotion. The no material qualification element of Prahlad, the compassion of Prahlad, the absolute, abject, no material interest in the life of Prahlad. He gives, we'll hear in his prayers, he gives reasons why he has that position. Well, he says, I saw my father. He had everything. And in a second, it was all gone. I'm not so foolish to try to get some of what he had, and then in a second, it's all gone. No, thank you. Very intelligent and very detached and very attached to the Supreme Lord. Now, the stage of perfection of Prahlad, we find this from Nectar of Devotion, that his perfection was always remembering and coming up for our New Year's event that we're going to be conducting in Chicago. That's going to be the theme. Always remember Krishna. Never forget Krishna. Because that's the purpose behind all the regulations mentioned in Nectar Devotion. Just this one thing. Always remember Krishna. Never forget Krishna. And Prahlad had that. He taught the way. Now, one who has that always remember Krishna capacity doesn't mean it's always going to be nice. It'll never be, you'll always have friends and never have any enemies. It's always going to be, you know, as you want it to be, and never as you don't want it to be. There's hardship and difficulty, and that hardship and difficulty doesn't drive away, steal away remembrance of Krishna. It's an impetus for strengthening one's remembrance of Krishna. If you're not on the right platform, then you can get on the right platform. Or else suffer. We don't like to suffer, so better to get on the right platform. So he's showing us the standard of always remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any situation. The kinds of feelings he has towards his father, towards Lord Nrisimhadev, towards people of this world. We heard a little bit about his classmates. He just has affection for others. There's these three things in the life of an exalted devotee like Prahlad. Three things. Personal service. They want the association of devotees because in the association of devotees, they'll hear about the Supreme Lord, and in hearing about the Supreme Lord, they'll be very happy. They want that association of devotees. And they want a friendly regard for all living entities. Friendly regard towards all living entities. There's several nice sections because, I'll say one of them. There's several nice sections in the Bhagavatam where the personality of Godhead offers someone who is dear to him, his devotee, whatever he would like, any benediction he would like. And these three things are mentioned. I would like always to be engaged in your devotional service. Here's one of those examples. when Krishna left Vrindavan and was brought to Mathura by Akura, he had different encounters. He met the washerman. It was deity worship. First he took his bath in the river Jamuna, and then he had to have suitable clothing for entering into Mathura, so the encounter with the washerman. And then the encounter with Kubja, sandalwood paste and fragrant oil. And then the weaver to give some ornaments. And then finally, a flower garland. It's deity worship. But interacting with people instead of only just a pujari. So when it came to the florist was expecting him. He had saved the best flowers. And the description is not in the Bhagavatam, but it's in Garga Samhita. The florist, because his occupation is making flower garlands and having flowers to sell, so he was always on the lookout for where's good places to get flowers. And he heard in Vrindavan they have some really nice flowers. And Vrindavan isn't so far from Mathura. So he ventured into Vrindavan, and one day he saw Krishna. And like many people that lived in Mathura, they'd heard about Krishna. And they had some attraction for Krishna. Some became devotees of Krishna. But the florist saw Krishna. And he was so attracted to Krishna. So he regularly went to Vrindavan hoping, Will I again see Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? So when he heard that Krishna had come to Mathura, he had gathered the very best flowers. He had two. The way that it's described is Krishna saw one of them hanging on the wall. Krishna didn't say anything. He just looked at. And the florist knew Krishna knows that Krishna wants the garland. So it was just a loving exchange. And he garlanded Krishna. And Krishna said, you pleased me so much by your devotion. You can ask any benediction you'd like. She said, I don't need anything. I'm just being in your service, that's everything. So, if you want me to take a benediction lifetime after lifetime, let me just be engaged in your service. And let me always have the association of your devotees, and let me always have a friendly disposition towards all living entities. There's other examples like that. It's a theme. So Prahlad didn't specifically ask for those things, but those are characteristics of Prahlad. He wants simply to be always in service to the Supreme Lord, always remembering him. That was his service of the nine types of devotional service. And other forms, but so the Lord wants him to be the king and rule the world and teach devotional service. The association of devotees, in his particular case, it's Narada, but others who are exalted devotees of the Lord and have regard. He has such regard for other living entities. We'll hear. But I don't want to leave and go to the spiritual world, leaving behind all of these people who are suffering and unnecessarily. Please take them too. We'll hear some more tomorrow morning. Paradukaduki is such a quality. Incredible compassion. And profound in his knowledge of the personality of Godhead and the process of devotional service and how to give the process of devotional service to others. His spiritual master is superlatively expert, Narada Muni. became fearless. Fearless. Teaching devotional service and having kirtan in Hiranyakashipu's school. Oh, fearless. Speaking to his father the way that he spoke to his father. Fearless. Not foolish. Fearless. So we'll learn a lot if we listen carefully. I'll make my best effort to share the mood, because it's what Prabhupada said, the mood of serving the Supreme Lord. He's teaching the way of the proper mood of serving the Supreme Lord. So we'll try to touch on that as we go along with his prayers, chapter 9. So any discussion? Questions? Lights? Oh. Here, Butter, you're going to get the light and then take the microphone, right? So can you take the microphone around? Comments or questions? Anyone? Yes? Back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In the Prahlad Maharaj's previous life, one of the scenario where...
Prahlad Maharaj does what?
Prahlad Maharaj's previous life.
In his previous life.
The Ekadasi fasting, unintentionally... And without having any consciousness to please Krishna or Narasimhadev, even then he got the benefit. So I was wondering, is just exception or... because I always worried that I don't have good intention and right consciousness in doing any devotional activity. So is this... how should we take this?
What's your question? What's the... how do we understand that? If you don't even know what you're doing and you get benefit anyway, how do we understand that?
Yeah, still we can be
benefit.
It's
powerful. Yeah. Even you don't understand it, it's powerful. Certainly, with proper intention, benefit is even greater. But even not knowing the benefit is very great. Is it so? Let's take... One of the examples that strikes me very much in Nectar Devotion is people who see the cart of Lord Jagannath and stand and appreciate. They manifest forearm forms of Vishnu. Now, I've seen lots of Rath Yatras, and I've never seen people manifest forearm Vishnu forms. And, you know, what they're eating and drinking and smoking and doing and speaking and, can, you know, that with how they're... So they're contaminated and they're quickly covered. But so it's not that that's an exaggeration. It means the potency is there. So this is an example where the potency, even he wasn't properly situated, didn't know what he was doing. He just had a fight with his girlfriend. It's powerful. As far as I understand that, this little narration is to illustrate the power of Ekadasi. Now, as Rupa Goswami has done in Nectar Devotion, he makes statements. And then there's scriptural references that illustrate and support that statement. So similarly in Hari Bhakti Vilas, there's statements and then there's scriptural support for that statement. So the power of Ekadasi is very special. I don't know where that scriptural reference comes from, but it's quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas. So that's just the authenticity of the statement. The message is very powerful, even unknowingly. Devotional service, agyata sukriti. And yes, doing so knowingly and purposely and intentionally, all the better. Does that answer your question? Okay. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for a wonderful presentation, Maharaj.
Hold it a little further away because there's feedback in the microphone.
Maharaj, my question is many times I've asked this and I've pounded upon it when...
Could you hold the microphone a little further away because there's feedback? Go ahead, keep going.
Yeah, so when he gives the benediction of 21 generations being created.
Yes.
So does it mean actual liberation or they get a chance?
It's actual liberation. And now what kind of liberation?
Yes.
Prabhupada gave the answer to that question by saying they will have the opportunity for devotional service. Because devotional service, he didn't add this, but devotional service is from the liberated platform. Brahmabhoyaya kalpate. That's Prabhupada's answer. They'll have the opportunity for devotional service in their next life. Because bhakti is voluntary. So they can say, no, I don't want to go to Vaikuntha. I'm going to party. But they'll have the opportunity at least, that kind. We don't want party goers in Vaikuntha. There we go. Okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I had a question about the pure state of envy, because I'm not quite sure I even understand what a pure state of envy is. If envious is believing that the grass is greener on the other side, right? Krishna, Vishnu is all grass, right? All sides. So what could he be envious of if it's all from him?
Well, if I've understood your question correctly, the difficulty to understand is due to the frame of reference or the lens or the definition of what envy is. Because when we're envious, it implies certain things. But the point that Prabhupada was making, I purposely brought it up because it's going to come up tomorrow morning also. I mean, purposely. Because it's one of these very interesting things. Krishna is the source of everything. This world is a reflection of the spiritual world. It's a distorted reflection. It's perverted, distorted reflection. But within Krishna is everything. Otherwise, even this place doesn't have an existence. This place is a reflection of Him. Now, within Him, there are feelings. In a pure state, the problem in, how do I understand Krishna has this feeling, is we're thinking it's feelings like we have. But it's not like that. It's the pure state, and ours is a distorted, perverted reflection of the pure state. We'll touch on it tomorrow. But so, why was he angry? Or what would... Because Madhu, in this case of Madhu Dvisa, Madhu had stolen the Vedas. Madhu and Kaitava. And what were they going to do with it? They were going to do terrorist stuff. Bad for everybody and everything. He was angry. Brahma was scared. Lord Vishnu was angry and he killed him. So, now that's a feeling.
wait a minute. You're supposed to be peaceful in the spiritual world. Why are you doing stuff like that? Because we're thinking with the lens of... So it's a transcendental. And then it spills over to, we're going to hear tomorrow, to the devotee. You know, these things are enemies. But there's a place for those things, even for a devotee, to be angry. We'll hear tomorrow morning. But it's connecting to this one. Whatever is there in the spiritual world is pure and uncontaminated. And this is a reflection of that that's impure and contaminated. What does that feeling feel like? We won't know until we become pure and uncontaminated. But we should know within Krishna is everything in its pure state. I mean, I could go on with this, but it's be a little arduous. Something else? Yes? Yeah.
Krishna Maharaj, this is in my mind from last 2-3 weeks. We have 3-4 examples. One is Dhruva Maharaj, one is Prahlad Maharaj, one is Narad Muni, where they only had seen Lord once and they got purified. Then we have 2 examples. One is Dhridvira, another one we recently talked about, Kekai, where they were in the association of the Lord, but then also because of the, maybe later on, because of the bad association,
they were against
the Lord. But why doesn't this doesn't work out that sometime with the Lord, one gets purified instantly, and maybe being in the service of the Lord, then also they get impacted, and...
Well, there's not a hard and fast rule that you can say, this is it. There's complexity, and there's within that complexity of your situation, their situation, our situation, there's complexity. Now, within that complexity, there's principles that are operating. Just, you know, taking Kaikeyi. She had defects. She was stubborn. And with, you know, without the... She was not a worldly person. She wasn't able to understand the consequences of what she was saying and doing. She had low feelings. Although she had, you know, she had exalted feelings, she also had some low feelings. That is, if Ram becomes king, then Kaikeyi is going to be favored instead of me being favored because I'm younger and more beautiful and the favorite of the king, but that's going to change if Ram becomes... So it was, you know, the worldly kind of envy. Then I'll have to become the maidservant of Kaushalya, forget it. And worst of all, my son, Bharata, she got covered by dirt, dirty thoughts through mantras association. Now, step back from all of that, and there was a plan, a transcendental plan, that Ram would leave and go kill Ravana. And she, Kaikeyi, was an instrument of that plan. And mantra was an instrument to help that plan. So, who can understand all that stuff? Well, Krishna understands all that stuff because it's his plan. We can't always understand all that stuff because we're not Krishna. So there's variables, and ultimately there's the five factors to action, and ultimately there's the Supreme Lord who sanctions everything. So we're not, we may, you, I, we may not be able to sort out why in this case and that case, you know, in another case, something else happens. There's many variables, and ultimately the Supreme Lord's plan. In the case of these exalted devotees, it's Leela. Because there's something else that's being taught in the course of all of this. And one of those things, in specific with Kaikeyi, is watch out for bad association. Even you may be very dear to the Lord and hold the Lord very dear to you. Watch out for bad association. And people that get in your ear and say bad things. Watch out, it's very powerful, very, 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 very powerful. She became covered. Later, she regretted. She realized what happened. A little different. There's a purpose of this, ultimately, the purpose of the Supreme Lord to help guide us in how to reach Him. In Dhruva's case, how to go beyond material desire, and etc. Narada in his previous life, how to go beyond loss of shelter. It could, and that was the source of that was the mercy of the Bhaktivedanta. Anyway, so in each case, there's lessons, and where do we take shelter? You know, most important for us, out of all of this, at the end of the day, is where's our shelter? For Prahlad, it was Narada. The highest vow that he did, it was Narada. It was Narada. Because people may have unintentionally do something exalted and not end up like Prahlad. It's Narada.
Is there any difference between spiritual envy and the material envy, Maharaj?
Of course. One's pure and the other's impure. One is, the impure is we're at the center and we want to, everything to be we're at the center. When it's not. It's like not identical, but it's like competition, and transcendental competition is, Prabhupada points to the gopis. They want to see Krishna's pleasure, and if one gopi is pleasing Krishna very much, that makes them pleased because Krishna is being pleased very much. But in order to increase Krishna's pleasure even more, they have transcendental competition, who can please Krishna more. And then there's the material kind.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll end. And tomorrow morning, I spend a lot of time, besides preparing, I spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to structure 13 classes and the material that we have to cover. I really struggled with it. So tomorrow morning, get some good rest tonight, because we're going to have a really long session tomorrow morning, because I couldn't break it up. It's meant to go together. The first seven verses are leading up to the prayers that start with number 8. So it just didn't make sense to break it. There's a lot. And it's important because it sets the mood for the prayers that will begin after breakfast, the second session tomorrow. So I'm just letting you know, it's particularly long. They're not all going to be that long. I'm just warning you, it's going to be long and important. So be prepared. And towards the very end, I also, on Sunday, there's another long section. The others are kind of about the same. And the foundation is important. So that's part of the reason for this. The life of Prahlad, and then the mood of Prahlad as he enters into prayer, and then his prayers will begin. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.